Hey, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of The Freelancer Show. Today, we have co-hosts Brad Large.
How's it going, everybody?
Petra Manos.
Hi, everyone.
I'm your host, Joel Schaubert, filling in for Charles Maxwood, who couldn't be here today. And our guest today is Italina Kirkness, who's going to talk to us about social media and what you need to do to shift it during our COVID crisis. Thank you, everybody.
Hi.
This episode is sponsored by Cloudways. If you're running a business, then you need a website. And your website needs to be up 24/7. You probably want support. I mean, let's face it, cloud hosting is a pain in the butt. And if you're really looking for a solution, you probably want something that will support WordPress or Magento or something that you can build up on your own without having to be an expert in running all of this stuff. So why not go with a solution that will provide all of this with 24/7 support, high availability, and will run your website with high performance and reliability? This is why I recommend that you check out Cloudways. Go check out Cloudways at cloudways.com. Use the promo code DEVCHAT for 30% off for 3 months on all plans.
All right, Italina. So this is a great topic for us right now. I mean, we've been in this long enough. We're all getting used to having to shift so many things in our lives, from basic shopping to how we see our friends to pretty much everything's been affected in some way. Why don't you get the ball rolling and tell us about what you're doing and how that's changed now during this whole COVID crisis.
Sure. So I have an 8-year-old social media company, and what we've been doing is creating content on behalf of our clients to promote them so they remain relevant online. Well, you can imagine that with our health crisis, that our messaging, the things we say, the way we represent or kind of sell for our clients online definitely takes a different tone, a more sensitive tone, addressing the situation that we're in. So just as an example, whereas before there might be your general post addressing holidays or really upbeat posts, I think it's really important to really address that things are not as great, right? To address, be vulnerable and share some of the downsides for sure. I think there's this tendency to only share the positives online. And with this, our clients have been really open with having a more vulnerable tone.
That's great. I noticed that for everyone, even just talking casually with people, there's some sense of wanting to do a certain amount of things to feel like your life is normal. But it's almost like this is weighing on people and they want a way to just some sort of space to kind of relate their experiences to it.
For sure. The truth is, or kind of the irony is that, you know, when we're promoting our clients online, when a business owner promotes themselves online, what they're looking to do is be relatable. Or that's what they should be doing, looking to be relatable, build a relationship with their audience or followers. Well, one of the most obvious ways to be relatable is to share your common experience. So if, for example, during the first week that shelter in place was put in place, you were feeling just really depressed, I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I think it's okay to share that because you're not alone. If anything, your audience is going to connect with you that much better. And that's the whole point of all of your marketing. Really, my philosophy is I believe in relationship marketing. And I think in sharing the hardships, sharing what you've gone through, and even how you've lifted yourself out of it. That way it's not, you know, 100% depressing. I think that's inspiring and it further establishes you as a go-to leader, as a resource.
One of the things I've noticed with one of my clients that relates to this is they're a heating and air conditioning company. So they have to go into people's houses. So they've been very cautious about separating people from each other. They can't visit. The ones that come back for parts have to wait for this little like dumbwaiter elevator to come down, so not in the building. Just incredible number of procedures to make sure that they're all isolated from each other and that their clients are protected. So I understand the part about being relatable. Do they want it with the twist of what we're doing to protect you? Or do they also just want to relate to you as a person and how you're kind of what you're going through as yourself in a company?
Yeah, I think you absolutely want to share the safety protocols you're putting in place. I think your audience will appreciate that as well. And that makes for excellent content. So again, it's addressing the situation that we're in. You're also putting people kind of on notice on what to expect so that it's not this weird, like, what is going on here? But yes, sharing your safety protocols, that makes people want to further do business with you. I know for myself, let's just take the grocery store situation. Those places that are enforcing the 6 foot distance and they're actually regulating and they're actually doing that, those are the places that I want to go. Where have I had experience where I've gone to a place where they weren't enforcing and I said in my head, I'm not coming back here again. I don't feel safe. You're not enforcing. So if you're the kind of business that has these protocols in place, that makes for excellent content. Your audience wants to know that so they know it's safe to do business with you.
So our clients, our listeners here are freelancers. So a lot of freelancers are probably finding themselves in the boat where really business hasn't changed much in terms of how they do their business. They might have already been working remotely. They might have already been working as a single entity, and they might not have been seeing a lot of clients face-to-face anyway. They might have been already doing a lot of meetings via Zoom. If someone's in that boat and really their business hasn't changed much, they just need to find new business, or they're using social media for the first time because maybe they've recently started their business, is there a way that they can put those overtones into their social media even if it hasn't affected them, or even if it hasn't, don't have any protocols to worry about?
For sure. Excellent. So we have clients who are definitely in that situation, and we're putting out content like, we're still doing business. We're still helping, let's say we're working with realtors. We're still helping people purchase their homes. A lot of homes are being sold at this point, and we're still able to help them. So I think whatever it is that you're going through, what you're experiencing, whether there's a significant change or not, I think that makes for excellent content because, again, there's a lot of people who can relate to what you're saying. So the fact that you're sharing whatever your situation is, I think that's very relatable.
I think that's a good point. I heard somebody that I follow, their email thread came out and said, let me start by saying it. So this really hasn't affected me that much financially, economically, because I've been starting this, freelance thing for a while. I side hustle and do that. So if anything, my business has only gotten better during this time frame. So I was starting with a low bar, but coming up through that, like, it's still like getting better, right? So I when I read this email, I kind of related to it, and I'd like to get your take on it as well. Is they're talking about social media and outbound marketing, and they said, don't assume that everybody's in a bad spot right now, because really you're just making an assumption then. And so, like, I noticed in the aviation business that which is where I do a lot of outbound marketing, that the safety protocols are huge, right? The risks of flying in an enclosed tube in the air are pretty big with a disease like that, or an illness like this. So when I look at that, I see them projecting a lot of their situation onto their customers, but the people that fly aren't necessarily in a very bad spot, especially private aviation. Some of their businesses are doing fine. Some of them are booming. Some of them are logistics companies that now all of a sudden they're finding all this time and money to invest in scalable processes, right? So are there ways to, like, is that a good thing to do, is try and, well, I think, feel like sure, I'm answering my own question, but there's a lot of projection I feel like going on social media.
I think there's a sensitive way to approach it. So what we've been doing and saying things like, there are businesses out there that are struggling. The restaurant industry, for example, has been hit really, really hard. But at the same time, one thing that we like to share is how even in the midst of crisis, there's opportunity. And technology companies, as you're sharing, they are thriving around. This is a time of opportunity. So I think it's a sensitive way to approach it is by saying, addressing the reality is, yes, there are several companies and businesses out there that have been hit significantly. At the same time, there are other companies that are thriving. And fortunately, we're one of them, right? Or like even framing it in terms of gratitude, we're really grateful that we're in this position that we're still able to serve you, you know? So I think there's sensitive ways to frame the conversation.
That's a good takeaway for me. When you said earlier on that the whole point is to be relatable, to relate to other people on social media. I'm a tech guy. I get caught up in my own head and I don't always think about that aspect of it, right? I get caught up and I find myself posting things where I'm like, you know, I am just kind of putting things out there and I'm not thinking about how to be more relatable with these posts. I'm just thinking like it's a bulletin sometimes, right? Or I treat it that way. So I'm guilty of that. But so that's interesting that you said, you know, try to find those ways to be relatable, address the situation. Basically, you're not, you know, trying to avoid it or anything like that, but you are trying to relate to people out there that could benefit from the service you offer, blah, blah, blah. You know, also shared human experience, right?
Yeah, I see this often in marketing where when people get to the computer, they turn into these like robots. And really, I like to think of it as you've got another human being right across from you and you're talking to that human being as compared to, like you said, a bulletin. That's a great analogy. So I always like to think about, hey, there's another person right there in front of me. I'm talking to that specific individual, and that's how you'd want to communicate in your marketing. Again, for the purposes of relationship marketing, our philosophy, what we do, there are definitely times I feel like even when you have announcements, like one of our clients happens to be a restaurant, and they wanted to announce that they're doing 20% off if you order via DoorDash. But we still were able to frame it in a way like, you know, local families love to feed the whole gang here, and now you can do it for 20% off, right? So rather than what you see like in department stores, sale, 20% off, you know, rather than doing that, we're all about conversational relationship building type of communication.
So one thing that I love that you said, I think about somebody like sitting across from me, right? So I would love to hear your tips for identifying those people, because that's something I struggle with is just like speaking directly to a specific target audience, you know, trying to pick out one person I'm talking to. Do you have any tips for like
absolutely
how to pick those people?
So to me, do you have clients right now, Brad? Do you have?
Yeah,
clients?
I do. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite client?
I do. I have like two or three clients that I really enjoy working with.
Okay. Yeah. And would you be able, you don't have to, but just yes or no, would you be able to say why you like these two or three people?
Yeah. I mean, like I've actually been looking at that. Like what is it that I like about these people?
Yeah. So I like to do, rather than trying to invent a person, think about who you currently have, who is your favorite, and picture that person directly across from you and talk to them. And then I like to find the commonalities between, let's say you have two or three people, find the commonalities between those few people. And that way you can create some consistent messaging. And that way you're attracting more people like them.
It makes so much sense when you say it like that.
I've got a question as well, actually. So being a freelancer, I find that I don't often have as much time as I would like. I'm sure there's no other freelancers in the world that feel like that. So I tend to automate a lot of my social media, which you're probably cringing at that. Yeah. and so I feel that most likely it doesn't come across as that empathetic human being just because a lot of it's automated. Now, at the same time, I guess that's a choice that I've made because I haven't been able to invest in all of the things. But is there something that someone like myself can do if we are automating our social media to just make it a bit softer so okay. that it doesn't come across as robotic?
Cool. Sure. So this is what I would suggest. You might not like it. So I know for me, if it's not on my calendar, it does not happen. It just doesn't happen. So if I were you, I'd block out, even if it were 10 minutes, 15 minutes, just kind of brain dump the kind of things you want to talk about. Just brain dump. And then from there, you have this whole list of topics that you can kind of fine tune. When you say automate, I'm not sure what you mean, if you've got some company doing
stuff. Oh, I've got it all scheduled out in advance.
Okay. So you have at one point blocked out time, created a bunch of content, and you've got it scheduled out. Okay. So great. So what we found is that the content that we created BC before COVID definitely needed to be tweaked. So we took the time. We took the time to do that. Something like this is so huge. It's so global. It's impacting everyone. Like, no matter who, it's touching everyone in some way, even if it's emotionally, even if it's not impacting your business. This being so huge is definitely worth taking the time. I'm not saying you have to throw it away completely, but tweak it. We actually did that, and we found that just adding a couple of different words makes a difference.
Do you think that people can tell, though, that it's been scheduled rather than, because when I'm thinking about, the empathy with others, it's more of a real-time chat about, oh, this is how I'm feeling today, whereas scheduled content tends to be more informative in nature. So most of my content, for example, is educational content rather than how I'm feeling content. And it's not so much because I don't think of that. Probably in many ways, I actually am thinking about it. I tend to be like the worrier that's like thinking about all the things. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not actually sharing myself enough, because I know that sharing yourself is effective. But you can't really schedule something a month earlier about how you're going to feel in a month's time.
Yeah.
So those posts just don't really end up in there unless I'm doing them live, which I don't tend to post live very often.
Yeah, I think that informational posts are great, and I think we can still make them relevant. So, for example, on my social media pages, I'm obviously sharing free social media tips and education. That would probably fall under informative. But the way we're making it relevant is saying things like, in these times, or even now, or more important now than ever, right? So that's how we're making it relevant to now.
Early in my career, I figured out which jobs were worth working at and which ones weren't, mostly by trial and error. I created a system that I used to find jobs and later contracts as a freelancer. If you're looking for a job or trying to figure out where you should go next, then check out my book, The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. The book walks you through figuring out what you want, vetting companies that meet your criteria, meeting that company's employees, and getting them to recommend you for a job. Don't settle for whoever has listed their job on the job board. Go out and proactively find the job you'll love. Buy the book at devchat.tv/jobbook. That's devchat.tv/jobbook.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I just wrote 100 tips, and I wrote them during coronavirus. So while I have tried to make them evergreen, at least I wrote them during this time. So probably some of those little subtle phrases are in there.
Yeah.
And when I do post live, I've been adding things like that as well, because yeah, I agree. You want to make it seem relevant, but sometimes the evergreen content is still relevant. It's more just about toning it down a bit in terms of that, not so much the excitement, but you know, not making it sound like something you wrote a year ago. But yeah, I did that actually. I turned off all of my automated content that I'd written prior to COVID. I just got rid of all of it and just wrote a whole lot of new tips and then automated that. But I still noticed, though, that if I share something live that's got some emotion in it, a lot more people respond, especially when I shared about how I lost a whole lot of clients that were in the hotel industry. That got a lot of response, and you know, people care about that. But then when you start going back into the usual thing of sharing content, you can get back into the noisy world of the internet where it's not always exciting and fresh and new and emotional.
Right. So. You know, I think that those are different types of content. When you're sharing yourself, right, what you're feeling, and then the informative educational piece. And I think that people still care about information share. They want answers. And so it's just a matter of putting those answers in this time, if that makes any sense, right? So showing that, hey, this is really important right now. You are in this situation. Here's this tip. Here's this education. Here's this information. Information share is still very, very important.
I think there's a huge value add there as well. So when I create content, you know, like Petra, you were saying, it's evergreen content, right? But then what I do on social is I try to make it relevant now and like thread those two ideas together of why it's relevant now. So anytime that I put social media wrappers on there, that's what I'm trying to do. I can take an evergreen piece of content and put it in there and share it, but the words that I'm using on the platform for that link or that resource or whatever it is, that's what I try to put that, you know, kind of personal touch on or make relevant for the moment. I try to do that. I'm not fantastic at it. I'm not, honestly, this is great info for me because I am not fantastic at social media. I'm pretty bad at it. I'm just not, I don't know. It gets frustrating for me as well because I feel like I have to do it. It's like one of those things I have to do. I'm not a naturally social person. I haven't been on Facebook in like a decade. I gave it up way before it was cool. But I get on LinkedIn and network there, but it's always hard. You know, it's hard for me to think through that because I do it so irregularly to draw that value proposition between the piece of content I have now and why it's still relevant or why somebody should look at it today. And even though there are tons of reasons, if you have businesses, like you said, now more than ever, you should be following up with people and just checking in. Because right now, I mean, relationship marketing, building relationships with people is not always asking when you want business from them. It's just saying, hey, you know what? I haven't followed up with you in a while. How are you doing?
For sure.
Like it can seriously be that simple.
Yeah.
So a lot of my content around CRMs obviously gravitates towards that, but putting that personal wrapper on there of being able to, because that's how the value for me, I get to be more personable than I naturally am by implementing this, right? So putting those wrappers, my whole point is putting those personal wrappers over that on social media so people see that value. I feel like that's the real challenge.
Yeah. And I think also I feel like it's less of a chore when it's like, okay, I get to be myself. Being just because I'm posting on social media doesn't mean I have to be like somebody's other person. I get to be myself and my audience is going to love me. That minority that doesn't love me, it's okay. This is my audience. The other thing I wanted to say about touch on is, social media. So as far as information share, totally still relevant, I think. And I think your information stands out when you are adding those personal wrappers. I like how you put that. To give an example, typically before COVID, I talk about things like how to leverage LinkedIn, how to rock your brand on Instagram, right? Just the different social media sites. Well, when COVID hit, I had to I'm still talking about social media, but the title of the talk shifted, how to shift your social media content during COVID, just really relating it to now. It's a lot of the same material, a lot of the same content. We're just framing it in context of where we are now.
You know, that brings up a question. I know for both Petra and I, we have a case where some of our clients have at least temporarily gone away because their businesses are in the ones that sort of have to shut down. I don't know in Petra's case, but in my case, a couple of my clients, they're not sure if they'll be coming back depending upon how long this lasts because they're kind of newer startups. So of course, they're not as well funded and don't have as much money to stretch. If we were to communicate with them, it wouldn't necessarily be about more business right now. What kind of approach would we take with if you have clients that are really a little bit on the bench right now, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Again, I kind of fall back on the share what you're going through. What you just said as far as, hey, we're not sure if we're still going to be around. We're not sure if we're going to weather this. Share that. And that's being transparent, as being honest. And I think people are really caring when it comes down to it, and people definitely respond. I think someone else shared, oh, the hotel, all the hotels, like people feel for that, you know? So I think that all makes for great content.
Now, if someone like one of us was to come to you as a freelancer, what would be some of the steps you would go through in working with us? Do you have a certain process you follow, or how would that work?
Most definitely. Great question. So a business comes to me, they are like, I need to upgrade my online presence. I need to get better. It's more important now. I really have to do this. I said, okay, great. So we signed them up. First things first, and this is the magic sauce, and this is how we add, I'm going to start using that personal wrapper. We have a whole questionnaire, a list of questions that allow us to pull out all this information from the business owner to get clear on who they are and their business. So that can mean there's obviously their services, their area, their geographic area of interest, their audience, all this information we need to know so that we can basically write about their company. So it's almost as if we become a part of that company, we're able to write about it, create content on their behalf. So once we get to know them, now, first things first, most businesses, maybe they have a LinkedIn or a Facebook business page or Instagram, maybe even a Yelp page. So it's a matter of what's on that page. So I'm not referring to the posts right now. I'm referring to the actual bios, what's on those pages. So the Facebook business page itself or the LinkedIn profile, that's a really obvious example. It has a bio. There's all this opportunity, all this space for the business owner to market themselves. When the average user actually, you know, they may or may not have an about section. The experience section just looks like a long laundry list of companies where they've worked or companies they've started. When we should actually, as freelancers, as contractors, as individual business owners, our social media sites should look more like websites, more like marketing pieces, less like a resume. If you look at the average Facebook business page, it's fairly blank. So if you click on the cover photo, for example, or if you click on the profile photo, it's blank. There's nothing there. There may be something in the about section. There's a services tab. I see most businesses, they don't even utilize that services piece on the Facebook business page. So anyway, I say all that to say is, first things first, once we get the questionnaire, once we get to know that business, we have to rewrite their pages, whether that be the LinkedIn profile, the Facebook business page, the Yelp page, the Instagram bio. Once they're all set up, I call that their online storefront. Once they're all set up, then it's the ongoing postings. So we can help them either, maybe they're already posting once a week or kind of randomly. We may just supplement their posts, create posts for them for the other days of the week. So they're more consistently present online. And obviously, so their posts are seen more favorably by the algorithm, all that good stuff. So yeah, we're content creators. We create content for our clients.
You've managed to make that content sound more like the person that's in the business because I find that when I create content, I'll often ask my team member to draft something, but then I always have to very heavily edit it because my team members can never sound like me. I mean, I'm quite technical. And even though I try to make my content more focused on my audience, so I'll remove a lot of jargon, I still find that my ideas can't be, but what I'm writing about is my ideas, and those ideas require a certain amount of knowledge. So it's very different for someone else to sound like me when they write. So how do you manage to do that? Or is that something that is a challenge for many solopreneurs?
So our magic sauce again is that questionnaire. When we give them that questionnaire, they're actually typing on it. So we've pulled out all this information from them. And in that, we're seeing how they talk. We're seeing how they communicate. And we're seeing the kinds of things they want conveyed online. That is the foundation that we use for creating content that sounds like them. So they love that. Now, for clients who feel like, oh, I still want to add my little flair, what we do is we create 1 month's full of content for them, again, based on that foundation, a questionnaire. We send it to them via Word document so they can make any tweaks. So believe it or not, Petra, our clients, the ones that we do that for, they are like, man, this is great. It's perfect. Or they're like, oh, I just added a couple things. It's literally just a matter of a few words are here, for here and there. So the I would say the questionnaire is the magic sauce.
Yeah, I like that idea of planning it all out ahead, because I know that I would be the kind of person that would want to correct any technical omissions or technical errors, because I wouldn't want to convey myself online as not having the most accurate information. And I know that I'm followed by my peers, and having them correct me on something technical, I would personally find that very embarrassing.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't want to be in a situation where I was posting something that was not conveying what I actually do or what is not something that I feel is correct. Sure. But that's a good point, and probably one of the benefits of trying to plan it in advance rather than doing it on the fly all the time. Otherwise, you can find yourself in this situation where you've got someone writing content for you and then you're trying to quickly check it before it goes out. And then if it goes out, you're trying to pull it back, and that turns into disaster. So. Yeah. Okay. No, that's an interesting point. Thanks.
That just reminded me of a story that when I made my first 10 YouTube videos, I launched them all as a block. And so I went through them, and Petra, you were saying, you know, they're technical pieces, so you want to verify that they're accurate. And I completely configured something completely wrong, like totally wrong, in like the third video in a series of like five. So it's like halfway through. And I don't think I've ever recovered from that. It's been terrifying ever since. I get paranoid. But no, I mean, it's still on YouTube today. And I just put like a caption on it and then re-released the video. And actually, I'm still here.
So, I've done the same. I've put captions on things too. It's a magic trick, the caption.
It is.
I've had to do exactly the same.
Yeah, it was, but I've learned from them, you know, after I did that, I was trying to get out, and you know what? I'm glad I didn't let it stop me from publishing, but at the same time, I was just kicking myself.
That's great. The old story from recording movies, right? We'll fix that in the edit.
Sometimes you have to though, because things change. So look, when you are sharing technical information, you can't assume that whatever it is that you've said today is even relevant next week. Sometimes you're doing R&D and you work out there's a better way of doing it. And what you thought at the time that you recorded that video, you thought that was the best practice. And then a week later, turns out you've learned something new. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to just go back and do that caption, because you'd be doing people a disservice if you pulled the information completely. There's still people out there that need that. Yeah. But now you found a better way. So going in and captioning things, I think that's a really great idea.
What does captioning things mean? What does that mean?
Putting a text. So you've gone blah, 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 blah. This is how you do it. Step one, step two. And then some text comes up saying, I'll actually do this instead. Or I meant to say that.
But, yeah. A literal edit. Yeah, I had that same thing happen. I was a CTO of a company. And we were recording some videos for promotional material. And so they had the whole film crew in there, and they had actors. They had, most of them were ex-actors or theater in some way. So they were fantastic at that part of the business. And they gave us a few prompts on how to speak and deliver our lines. And they'd written some lines. And I was fine for about the first four of them. And then just like you guys, on the fifth one, they had something that was literally not just technically incorrect, just wrong, backwards of the way it would be. And we would come to that, and I would stumble on those words every time because my mind couldn't believe I was supposed to say that. And we talked about it, and they said, don't worry, this is just content. You know, this is just sound good while you're saying it. And after about three or four stumbles, I'm like, guys, this isn't going to work. It's so wrong. We've got to rewrite this section. And it wasn't hard. It was just a little blur. But just like you guys, if there's something out there that's just really technically wrong, when that's so much of your job and your history, almost all of us as freelancers come from being deep technical experts in something. And it's like, you just can't give up on that part because it's so much a part of who you are.
One of the biggest pain points that I find as I talk to people about software is deployment. It's really interesting to have the conversations with people where it's, I don't want to deal with Docker. I don't want to deal with Kubernetes. I don't want to deal with setting up servers. I don't, you know, all of these different things. And in a lot of ways, DevOps has gotten a lot easier. And in a lot of ways, DevOps has also kind of embraced a certain amount of culture around applications, the way we build them, the way we deploy them. And I've really felt for a long time that developers need to have the conversations with DevOps or adopt some form of DevOps so that they can take control of what they're doing and really understand when things go to production, what's going on, so that they can help debug the issues and fix the issues and find the issues when they go wrong and help streamline things and make things better and slicker and easier so that they'll more generally go right. So we started a podcast called Adventures in DevOps. And I pulled in one of the hosts from one of my favorite DevOps shows, Nell Shamrell Harrington from the Food Fight show, and we got things rolling there. And so this is more or less a continuation of the Food Fight show where we're talking about the things that go into DevOps. So if you're struggling with any of these operational type things, then definitely check out Adventures in DevOps. And you can find it at adventuresindevopspodcast.com.
So having gone through all of our vulnerability stories on this, I think that my main question that I have now is like, what kind of like, how do you know when to update your social media? How frequently should you be doing that to stay agile? Like, do you have any tips around that? Because like you said, I'm horrible. Like, you didn't say I'm horrible at this. I'm horrible at this, but you said if it doesn't go on your calendar, you're not going to do it, right? That's very true for me. So how frequently should I be doing this to keep up to date? Or is there some kind of event in my business that would tell me it's time to maybe revisit my social?
Yeah. Okay. So the page itself, as in the bios, what's on, not the post, but on the bios, that's not going to change frequently unless there's a major change in your business. Like you said, an event in your business. So that's when you may make an edit or an addition. As far as your posts, how frequently to post, the algorithms, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, the algorithms favor consistency. And consistency can mean minimum 3 times a week. So most of our clients are posting 3, 4, 5 times a week. And what I mean by favorable algorithm is obviously your posts are going to be pushed out and be viewed by more people. Your business can be viewed by more people. Whereas if you're only posting once, twice a week, your post literally gets pushed down to the bottom of the barrel and you're not viewed by as many people. So you want to be consistent, one, for the algorithm, but also if you're trying to establish yourself as an authority in a certain industry and we only hear from you, you know, randomly, it's going to be harder to do than if we more consistently hear from you. So for example, I decided to create a Q&A during, you know, for COVID, like, hey, free Q&A on how to shift your social media content during COVID as a give back. You know, a lot of companies are doing some kind of, you know, the insurance companies, you name it, they're doing some kind of give back and showing like, you know, niceties, et cetera, for their clientele. So I think it's, as leaders, you should do some kind of give, you know, first, you know, service first. So I'm doing the Q&A and I did it once and it was 25 attendees and it was only 30 minutes and people loved it. So I said, okay, well, I'll do this monthly. You know, there are people who are doing things weekly or biweekly. I think whatever it is you choose, obviously choose what you can bear, but also just as a way to give back, be of service, and establish you as a leader in your field.
On that, so I'm finding that since COVID has hit, I'm getting so much more email and things than I did before, just because a lot of people are needing to find business in a hurry. And all the email marketing's come out. There's some really heavy marketing going on. How can we make our social media not sound like we're trying to shout over everyone else during this time? Because, yes, we want to have a certain frequency. We want to have the algorithm work for us, but then everyone else is in the same boat. There's a lot of people looking for business, and it really does feel like a shouting match out there at the moment. I don't know if it's, if you've noticed a shift in that.
Yeah, I've definitely gotten more marketing email. I think that the different types of marketing, I like to think of the different types of marketing as in legs of a chair. You're not going to just do one thing as a way to build relationships and connect with people online. There's a number of things to be doing. So if you're only email marketing or if you're only posting on social media, I don't think that's ideal. I think you want to do a combination of things, from phone calls, right? That shows true empathy and true caring. Like, you took the time to pick up the phone, call someone. People are doing handwritten notes. People are doing the webinars and free this and free that, right? I think if you're doing a combination of things that are truly, in fact, valuable, that are truly answering the kind of questions your audience is asking, then your content is what's going to stand out in that, as you said, shouting match. 25 people showed up to my Q&A because they genuinely want to know that information. It's valuable information, that's information they found valuable. So I think the key is to make sure that what one variety, right? Calls, email, webinars, Zoom, Q&A, whatever. And then as well as truly valuable information. I'll just add, I think the flip side, the alternative, if you're not sharing anything, how are you the leader in that field? Where's your voice, right? And then it's kind of, you can, like you said, it's a disservice to your audience. It's like you disappeared on us in our most vulnerable time.
It's funny because as you were talking through that, I instantly thought of like four or five people on LinkedIn in my feed that I actually enjoy seeing their content. And so my homework assignment is to look at those people and see what they're doing and try to figure out how I can kind of apply that. Because at the end of the day, what we're talking about is value creation at different levels. And marketing really is an exchange of value like anything else. You're trying to, like you said, 25 people showed up because you had valuable information for them, right? They wanted to hear that. So you had an engaged audience because you were giving them value, right? So asking that, I find more and more as I go through and get, you know, read or hear or anything about marketing, it's that value exchange that really stands out to me. How can I give value to the people that I want to, so that I could be that person on their feed that they're like, oh, Brad has another post, I want to read that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people, I see their name and I'm like, I can't wait to see what this is.
Nice. I feel like the phone is just a very valuable tool that we've kind of gotten away from, like to actually talk to the person where you hear the voice and they hear your voice. And that is the best way to pull out a ton of information from people. So what I did when I got out off that Q&A, I called a few of those 25 people and I asked them questions like, why'd you want to come to this? And what did you like about it? And they told me a bunch of stuff that I can utilize for our marketing. So I think picking up the phone, it's a little underestimated.
I'm the kind of person that freaks out when my phone rings. So we're all paused. You've got a group of introverts here that we're all contemplating using the phone more. I don't know if anyone else feels the same as me.
It's an amazing tool. So even before COVID hit, as a practice, if I attend a networking event or a mixer or mingle or whatever it is, you know, you walk away with business cards, right? And I'm just curious, you guys tell me, what do you do with those business cards?
I put them in my CRM and I create follow-up tasks.
Okay.
For email or phone calls, depending on their qualification towards a lead process.
All right. So let's say you went to the mixer last night. When are they going to get the first contact from you?
Oh, that's easy. So when I put them in, I have an automation to send them an email.
That night, that same night, or
It'll wait. So it'll send it either that night if it's not like a certain time, or the next morning.
Okay. So I hear that that's common, and I hear that. All good. I applaud you for at least doing something. What I do is I call every single business card. I call them because that's the only way I'm going to find out and get a feel for whether there's anything going to happen out of this, right? If I have them, or even if it's valuable to have them on my newsletter, right? On my CRM, that's the phone call is very, very powerful. And the fact that no one wants to use it makes it even that much more powerful. If you're the one who's using it, you stand out.
Yeah. An email is very common. A phone call is not common.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've attended an event, let's say the night before, the very next day, because I called everyone, I got a client that next day, all because I picked the phone and got a feel for where they are. Think about the people who are in our CRM who actually want to use our service, but they're just not picking up the phone. So imagine if we picked up the phone.
Yeah, why wait?
So I am a big fan of the phone. I actually do three things every time I get a business card and meet new people. I call them, I put that can then determine whether it makes sense to add them to my list, and then I LinkedIn connect with them.
It's interesting because in my lead process for my website, the thing that I'm trying to get people to do is give me a call, like do a Zoom call. So it's funny to me that in the reverse situation where I've already met this person, that I discount it. But really, I should be focusing on that, because that is literally the same reason you said, the minute I get them on the phone, I know if they're qualified and interested within 30 minutes.
Yes.
Like well under that most of the time. If we're on the phone for past 10 minutes, then I know they're interested. We're talking specifics at that point.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting.
So yeah, as much as I'm an advocate for social media usage, that's not the only thing we can rely on. Email is not the only thing we can rely on. Phone is not the only thing we can rely on. We have to use them together. There are tools available for us.
I think that's a good point, especially I don't think there's anything quicker at drumming up business than going out and meeting people in real life. I don't think there's anything as effective as that. From my personal experience, from anecdotal evidence of other people, everything, I feel like that's like the best. So it's funny because now COVID makes that virtually impossible. So we're finding these other ways to emulate that. But the absolute next best thing, obviously, is a video call or a phone call.
For sure.
Like, so that has just become the de facto primary way to get new business, as far as like, I just talked through that right now. I didn't think of that until right now. So thanks.
I still find that my online marketing attracts more referrals from the people that have already met me in real life, because they're on your radar, and then any remarketing and things you're doing, it doesn't tend to, I mean, as a solopreneur, it would be different for a larger business, but it doesn't tend to necessarily bring in new clients, but it reminds those referral partners that have met you to keep referring to you.
For
so
sure.
the in real life relationship always trumps. The tricky thing is though, with some of us that are trying to reach markets that aren't necessarily in our local market, that can be a bit harder then, because you can go to those mixes and you're meeting with an accountant and a bookkeeper and a financial planner and a real estate agent, and those people might not necessarily know anyone in your target market of e-commerce businesses, for example. So it really depends on who your target market is as to who you're mixing with. But that I always find that even if I do have a very niche target market that I'm not finding locally, it's those referral partners that are still managing to find them. When they do find them, they're like, oh, that's the perfect person for you. And if they're seeing your social media posting or your advertising, that they remember you're still in business.
For sure. Yeah, I'll add to that, that yes, it's referral partners, but also those prospects who maybe they weren't ready at the time, but they consistently see you over and over and you haven't gone anywhere. And wow, you are the respected authority in this industry. Then later on when they are ready, they think of you because you've been relevant all this time.
All right. Well, that's great. Let's move into the picks section of the show and everybody bring up something that they've been doing lately or something they're interested in, they'd like to share with our audience. Let's start with Petra. Petra, what's your pick for the week?
All right, so I got some, I got a cloud software tool over the last week that I've been using that I really like called Banner Snack. And Banner Snack lets you create display banners. It lets you create animated ones or fixed banners. And what I like about it is you can choose all the different sizes that you want and it will automatically shift your image around and resize things so that it fits all the different spaces. And yeah, I've been finding that to be quite an interesting tool. So primarily because of the fact that it does, like I said, it resizes things, but also the UI is really intuitive on it. I've been trying to use the Google one and the Google one is terrible. So this one I'm really liking. I give it a big 5 stars. Actually, I'm enjoying it.
Great. Thank you, Petra. And Brad, what is your pick for the week?
Yeah. So my pick this week is going to be Meet Edgar. I've been using them for a while and don't shoot me, Edelina, but I automate my social media and I do a lot of posting. But what I like about them is that you can control the calendar really well so that you can put like time limits on social media posts or use one time so that you can kind of post things out and test them. And it's really helped me save a lot of time and like real life time by batching it up, putting in my calendar and then updating it. So I've really enjoyed that. So I'll pick that.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, Brad. Italina, you're a guest. What's your pick for the week for us?
Okay. So it's actually an appliance. Does an appliance count?
Anything counts. Anything you think people might like to know about.
Okay, cool. So I got this machine that basically turns my water into awesome, clear, pure, clean, amazing water for your body. You may have heard of it, the company called Kangen Water. And it's like the best, it's the cleanest water you can drink. It pulls all this bad stuff out of the water. And it's just, it's been amazing.
Fantastic. Good time. Good advice in the COVID time. Stay hydrated out there. That's great. My pick for the week is about 2 years ago, I did my first all online conference. I was used to going to techie conferences in person, and Charles Maxwood at DevChat TV had this online one for JavaScript, and I really liked it, and there's another one coming up in a week. And so if you're somebody who thinks you might like to try that out, definitely head over to devchat.tv and watch the schedule there. I know Charles has always got more on the horizon for different ones. So that's my pick for the week is online conferences in general. Mm-hmm. Okay, and Italina, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure, social, obviously. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, Italina Kirkness, all I's and A's. On Instagram, I'm Italina K, just my first name, and the K from my last name. Yeah, easy to find. Google me, easy to... Very easy to find.
Great. All right. Thank you, everybody. And watch for our next episode of The Freelancer Show. Today's guest was Italina Kirkness. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.